Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yes, the most modernist holiday, undeclared, on the secular calendar in the United States of America and quite possibly the world. It is 420. Yeah. It's also, well, never mind. We're not even going to mention it. But here it is, the 20th day of April, 2015. And this is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room. We've got a merry little gang that hangs out there every evening. You can be part of it as easily as going there, picking yourself out a screen name and a password, and hopping right in. Good evening this evening to Jugapunch and Mo Liberal and Texas T. More to follow along in a little bit. And, of course, moderated capably and admirably by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Man Cave, also known as Sparky when he's not holding space, being as he is a third stage guild navigator. But he's Man Cave this evening. Now, I will mention that the horn is a listener supported undertaking. We have stayed on the air at low these many years because of your kind willingness to support it, because, well, you want to have it. Remember, we don't have any subscription fees here. We're not selling anything here. We're not engaged in capitalism here. We're trying to keep this thing going. And with that in mind, well, we have, let's see, about $400 to go to the end of the week and about $1,000 to go to the end of the month. And I put that out there simply because it would be best to get started sooner rather than later. And thanks going out to Paul, who jumped in right before airtime. He says, it's Paul, formerly of Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, now in Rough and Ready, California. I don't have internet, but I download the program at White Rose, looking forward to tonight. Well, thank you very kindly, Paul, and hopefully it will live up to your expectations. It is also the 20th of the month, and that means it's time for the 20th of the month up over down under challenge via our buddy Robert in Australia. He says, it's time for the 20th of the month Down Under Up Over Challenge. It's back on, but different this time. The exchange rate is a killer. The American dollar is it's a veritable juggernaut right now on the world currency markets. And as a result, Robert says, so this month I'm putting $50 Australian on the table, which is about $38 American at the moment. But would like it matched by $50 American for those living in the States. So I'm not sure how we can work out the fractionals, but it is the 20th of the month, up over down under challenge. And Robert asking for folks to meet his $50 Australian with $50 American. Thank you, Robert. Thank you very, very kindly. Jeremy letting me know loud and clear on TuneIn. You know, that's really helpful. I mention that most evenings when Jeremy sends the message because, well, when I don't hear from him, I generally know that things have gone sideways. that's what happened Friday when White Rose took a powder briefly until I said we were off the air, at which point it said, oh, no, and came back to life, and then we didn't have any further problems. And indeed, as the saying goes, smoke 'em if you got 'em. The smoking lamp is lighted. Old archaic navalism there. The smoking lamp is not lit. The smoking lamp is lighted. Okie doke. Good deal. Oh, let's see. you know what day it is. Beyond being 4:20. And yes, it's that birthday, which of course inspires people all over the country, people who are fond of the number 88, and people who are fond of, well, you know, the black uniforms, right. Which reminds me, being as how it is Moran Monday. And being as how this is, well, this was, oh, let's just get started. This was a self, almost a self-writing Moran Monday, but more on that in a minute.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. It's Moran Monday on the horn. You wait for it all week long until the carnival comes around at the beginning of every week, and here it is. Moran Monday on the horn. That's right. The best and the worst of birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, booger eaters, birchers, baggers, libertarians, republicans, one and all. The weird are out and about, and they walk among us. Quite often they walk into the Moran Monday tent where we are able to restrain them and detain them for a little while for your inspection. That's right, for less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you too can go behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas and hear the strangest, the weirdest, the most hateful, the most bizarre, the most poor spelling of Morans in the universe. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And yes, we can tell by virtue of the fact that the Calliope is going at full steam. Calliope's being steam-powered, are they not? That we're gonna be busy this evening. By the way, Jeremy in Vermont pointing out something, and it reminds me that I need to make a probably mention of it, too. Jeremy says, oh, be thankful that our wind is not in West Virginia. I'm willing to bet the toothpicks would all have long snapped at the dental floss would have broken, therefore no horn. That may happen yet. Somewhere in about the next hour to 2 hours, we're supposed to be hit by a son of a gun. Thunderstorm. Now, the thunderstorm was out hundreds of miles to the west of us and south of us earlier, and long about 2:30 this afternoon, the power blinked. You know, the ancient, antiquated, toxic, poisonous, early 20th century technology that is the Appalachian power grid. Yeah, it blinked earlier, and that's not a good sign. So I will. We've got uninterruptible power supplies here that afford us a little bit of a cushion for shutting things down. But if things go sideways in a hurry, I'll let you know. I hate announcements like that, but I needed to get that in there. But a couple of things, being as how it is April the 20th, an inquiry
I had actually meant to send this in an email to Dr. John, so I don't know if he will hear this or not. But I happened to be looking at the miserable insult to fish guts, fish wrap, that is the Beckley, West Virginia newspaper earlier today. I mean, it's a real stinker, okay? It's awful, just terrible. And so there was a... There was above the fold. Lead article in the paper, the very, very small Jewish community in Beckley held its Holocaust Remembrance Day this past weekend. And they had a lecturer who was a rabbinical student studying in Israel, none of which has to do anything with this little sort of low-rent Moran nomination, except for the fact that inside, and I want to work through this carefully, because as I read it, I was thinking, well, maybe enough time has passed that this is in the style manual now for journalism writing. But remember, this particular newspaper is owned by a consortium that's owned, I think, by the State of Alabama Teachers Retirement System. And it has a profound right-wing bent. For instance, on the editorial page, and I'll get back to it in a minute, but this, and I know it's just a shitty little newspaper in southern West Virginia, but it is indicative of a lot of different attitudes. On the editorial page, they reprinted an editorial from the Charleston Daily Mail, which is also an insult to fish guts, insofar as it is the primo right-wing Republican rag for this state. And the editorial treated of that topic, which we discussed a couple of weeks back when it happened, when the power went out in Washington, D.C. Only in this case, the Morans, because it's Moran Monday, the Morans at the Charleston Daily Mail, as reprinted by the Beckley Register Herald, blamed the power outage in D.C. on the EPA, who hates coal. No, really. Maybe them people's what got inconvenienced by the power outage in Washington, D.C. wouldn't have had their power go out if the EPA wasn't all fired hating on coal. And if they wasn't shutting down coal-fired power plants, what poisons 40,000 or so people a year to death. We sure do wish the EPA would quit a-hating on our co. No shit. Go read it for yourself. Registerherald.com, or maybe register-herald.com. It's an exercise in bizarre. But that's not the point. And we'll get to other more broadly brushed Morans presently. In the story about the Holocaust remembrance taking place at Temple Beth Hillbilly, I'm not sure what the name of the place is. It's just, I mean no disrespect. The writer, the reporter who wrote the story, went to pains to give a little thumbnail history of the Holocaust, which, of course, most of us here in the Horn Commune Family Congregation know, because we are intelligent and informed, and we're not deniers, and we understand the horrors of fascism. That's why we hate to see it on the march in the United States. And when it came time for a first reference to the political party under which the Holocaust was organized. Instead of referring to Adolf Hitler, 615. No, it was we lost the pool was lost much earlier today on Facebook to Carol Baker. But instead of referring to Adolf Hitler or the Nazis, the author went to great pains to say Adolf Hitler and the National Socialist Workers' Party of Germany. Now, I would have just let that blow past were it not for the likes of morons like Jonah Goldberg running around out there screaming, "See? See? Hitler was a socialist!" And I thought, isn't that interesting? But then the writer, the reporter, went further in talking about the Holocaust and talking about the 11 million killed in the various camps and ghettos and what have you. And made specific, and then made specific reference to the horrors perpetrated by Joseph Stalin and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And that just made the little hairs stand up. My spidey sense tingled a little bit. Because it was so clangingly out of place that it almost looked like this writer for this extreme right-wing local newspaper rag had gone out of his or her way to use the word socialist in the context of a couple of people who ordered the mass killings of millions of people. And that's why I reference it. If you want to go to the Register Herald homepage, you can read the story online, most likely. I can't imagine them putting that tripe behind a paywall. Who'd buy it? Because journalism is not happening in Beckley, apparently. But I could not help noticing that, and noticing the overt attempt to lean on the word socialist as if either the government of the Soviet Union or the government of Nazi Germany were actually that. And I wouldn't have given it a second thought were it not for the fact that, yeah, this paper has in fact accused, if I'm not mistaken, that one in our White House of being, you know, a socialist. So that just kind of crawled all over me this morning when I didn't need crawling on at all. Just, you know, something to consider. Also, the fact that if you happen to go and read that Holocaust Remembrance story, you'll note that it loops back on itself and repeats itself, leading one to believe that no one is actually editing copy at that newspaper anymore, which would not surprise me in the least. Hell, it being the Beckley paper, I'd be surprised if they actually used computers to type. It strikes me as being something more like stuff written in brown crayon and just handed to the printer. And frankly, I don't know why this story made it into the 20th of April edition, because the National or International Holocaust Remembrance Day is, what, January? Something like that? To mark the the liberation of the death camps? Go figure. No idea. So that's just, you know, a little bit of the morality that walks along with me most any day. But certainly that isn't, that's not our lead moron. And I'm not sure this guy is our lead moron either. But we must remember that the tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood from the testicles of patriots.
Wolverines!
Yeah. Story comes out of Los Angeles, where, frankly, I didn't realize it was this easy to just toddle around with a firearm. But apparently it is. It was Saturday, and Saturday was probably just another lovely day in Los Angeles, when a 26-year-old fellow was out for a stroll, as the newspaper account notes, out for a stroll. I should say news account, not newspaper. Out for a stroll down Beverly Boulevard, and he got to the corner of Robinson Street and Silver Lake, all of which is absolutely meaningless to me. I know nothing of the streets or anything of L.A. But as this 26-year-old man was strolling with his girlfriend on Beverly Boulevard and Robinson Street in Silver Lake, at around a quarter to one in the morning, strolling at quarter to one in the morning. Maybe it's so hot that that's when you have to go for your strolls in L.A., who knows. But at about a quarter to one in the morning, our strolling 26-year-old guy in the company of his lady friend, girlfriend, he heard a pop. And having heard the pop, he then realized that the freedom protector that he was a-carrying while strolling with his girlfriend on Beverly Boulevard and Robinson Street in Silver Lake at about a quarter to one, had somehow managed to discharge, that is, to wit, fire. Because apparently our freedom protecting Second Amendment remedy toting quarter to one in the morning strolling on Beverly Boulevard and Robinson Street at Silver Lake 26-year-old fellow, well, he might have wanted to take a stroll at a quarter to one on Beverly Boulevard and Robinson Street and Silver Lake in L.A., but he didn't want to do it without protection. And by that, I don't mean a condom. And because here in America, you never know when you're going to be a good guy with a gun who runs into a bad guy with a gun, you don't want to waste a bunch of damn time either chambering around into the chamber of a semi-automatic pistol, or, you know, having an empty space there where the in the cylinder of your wheel gun. No, you want to be able to yank it out of your pants and take to protecting freedom. Only in this case, the bad guy with the gun was actually nowhere. Well, the bad guy with the gun was the guy who thought he was the good guy with the gun. And now he's down at least one testicle for his trouble.
He blowed them up. Blowed them up real good. Like.
Having heard the pop and having realized that he had just blown a ball off, and I don't mean that in a good way, they rushed him to the hospital where he was said to be in stable condition. His girlfriend was the only witness, and that's the last I have of it. No word on charges. No word on surgical procedures. Maybe they can give him one of those silicone or nylon, like they do with male dogs when they're getting fixed, so he won't feel all lopsided. We've got entirely too little information in this story, but we can still ask some questions. What kind? No, we won't. No, we won't call him one of those. No, not that either. What kind of moron do you feel like? I mean, when you go out for a stroll with your girlfriend at a quarter to one on Friday night, Saturday morning, and wind up in a... What kind of... Hey, how was he dressed? What kind of pants was he wearing that he somehow or another managed to... Kabang! And at the emergency room, did the doctor look at him and look at his junk and say, "You missed it by that much. Get your hands off my junk." Yeah, that's what they're called. Nudicles. I knew I had it back there. Nudicles. So you think he can get a nudicle so he won't be all... Yeah. Not even a holster. But, of course, holsters often don't work because you'll remember the upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, freedom-protecting Republican from where? What was it? New York State? Ohio? I can't remember. Who had her brand-new bra holster on and managed to shoot herself through the heart or some such. I'm just, really, I'm trying to get my mind around, because if it, you know, there's not a lot you can do with a revolver. Was it a revolver? We don't know. The folks at NBC Los Angeles did not bother to tell us. It's a more compelling and interesting case in Moranity if, in fact, it was a semi-automatic pistol. Because then he had to be a more active participant as an author of his own demi-castration. Because that meant that he had to put the clip in. And, well, wait, is another one of those Glock incidents? Because there's no active safety, there's just that little thing on the trigger. But even with the Glock, with the thing on the trigger, if there's no round in the chamber, you really can't hurt yourself. Because... Even if let's say you see freedom not being protected and freedom needing protecting, and you yank your freedom protector out of your pants, and you in just a matter of a second you ka-chish, and blam 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 freedom blam Wolverine blam blam right. But no, if in fact it was a semi-automatic weapon, he had to have taken it out, Now, we're making some assumptions about even some minimal degree of responsible gun ownership here. He had to take it out, check to see if it was loaded, and then either decide he was comfortable sticking it in his pants with a round in the chamber, or, and this is even more Ann-ish, or chambering a round in and then sticking it in his pants and going for a walk. Guys, have you ever walked around with a gun in your pants? Yeah, I know. Is that a gun in your pants or are you happy to see me? No. There's a reason holsters exist. Because using the waistband of your pants as a place to carry a weapon, well, it chafes a bit, really. And you got to wonder how long the girlfriend's going to stick around with the one nut wonder. God, what are you going to do? Shoot the other one off? You know, freedom, right? Because Merca. Do you suppose over there at Gun Goobers of America or the National Repiglic and Rifle Association, when they get together, you reckon Wayne LaPierre and Ted Nugent just sit there and, look at this one. We got us another live one here. Well, not really. No, not so much. But stuck it in his pants and blew his ball right off. Yeah, I tell you, that's a patriotic American. Yeah, they do. The NRA laughs all the way to the bank. Jesus. But that ain't all. Oh, no. Not by a long shot. No. I think probably our lead moron has to come from Talabama. As is so often the case, of course. This story comes from Left in Alabama, which is a wonderful website for keeping up with right-wing Christianist family values, excesses and morality in Alabama, beginning up there on what is called Goat Hill, where still stands the Alabama Capitol, whereon once upon a time Jefferson Davis took the oath of office of the presidency of the breakaway treasonous Confederacy. Well, a group of African-American pastors allegedly presented to Judge Roy Moore the Letter from Birmingham Jail Award. That's what they call themselves, Coalition of African American Pastors, CAAP. Today, Reverend Williams Owen, because Barbie enjoys it so much. Wait a minute, let me do this.
Today, Reverend Williams Owens, president and founder of the Coalition of African American Pastors, announced that Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore would receive their first ever Letter from a Birmingham Jail Award in recognition of Justice Moore's principled stand in defense of traditional marriage. The award ceremony will take place on the steps of the Alabama Supreme Court, 300 Dexter Avenue, on Friday, April 17, 2015, at 11 a.m. The newly inaugurated Letter from a Birmingham Jail Courage Award is granted to honor someone whose dedication to justice and natural law has led to an outstanding act in defense of first principles. There is no one who stands out as more deserving of this recognition than Chief Justice Roy Moore. Justice Roy Moore is an example for all of us, stated Reverend William Owens, president of CAP. By making a principled and persuasive stand for marriage, Justice Moore has singled himself out as someone who is ready to defend our most cherished values and help lead this new civil rights movement. By his words and actions, he has helped preserve marriage, the family, justice, and the spirit of democracy. This is what it means to be a Letter from Birmingham Jail Courage Award recipient. We hope that his example inspires others to take similar action to defend marriage in their own communities. Yeah, really, this outfit of gospel sharps trode right across the back of Dr. Martin Luther King and actually compared Dr. King's Letter from Birmingham Jail to the bigotry espoused by Judge Roy Moore. Oh, you're welcome, Barbie. Anytime I can get it. Anytime I'm good for a giggle. Yeah. So no, really, they followed through on this, even with an opportunity for sober and mature reflection. They still do it, Reverend William Owens deciding that Roy Moore hating on people for getting married is just like Dr. King leading a struggle for basic constitutional rights. You can't get much more in than that. Let's go to the audio, shall we? Do let's. This is precious.
Now, Reverend Owens, president of the Coalition of African American Pastors, will come and speak and present an award.
Reverend Owens, presenting this award, Coalition of African American Pastors wants to honor a man who is standing out as Dr. King did and suffering the consequences. There was great suffering on the part of Dr. King. He's honored today. We glorify him today, but he suffered greatly. Suffered from all segments of society. But he was able to do what he did because he had faith in his God. And here we are today on a path where I believe Chief Justice Roy Moore will be the leader in this country. I promise you that his leadership is needed, his faith, his courage is needed. So we just wanted to take the time to come to Alabama to present him this first Coalition of African American Pastors, Martin Luther King Letter from Birmingham Jail, because this letter is 16 pages long. And he wrote it on scratch paper while he was there in prison. And we want to give him that award because although he is not violated in the law, he has stood up for the law. But he's getting persecuted if he were violating the law.
See, this is one of those moments when you can be certain that there is no thunderbolt-wielding, great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, because, once again, this would be one of those moments, and there wouldn't be anything but a little greasy spot left of Pastor Owens, for lying. really, not a little bit, but a lot lying. Yes, yes. Roy Moore is being persecuted just like Dr. King. Interestingly, I have yet to see a photograph of any of Roy Moore's assistants or anyone like that leaning over his prone, dead, gunshot body. I have yet to see any video reporting of police with dogs and fire hoses attacking Roy Moore and his followers. There is no footage to be found of Alabama state troopers and Alabama National Guardsmen beating on Roy Moore and his followers with truncheons for standing up for traditional family values merge. Somewhere out there, the little bit of voltage that used to be the animating force of Dr. Martin Luther King is floating around the universe going, what? No, really, what? Are they out there saying that I gave my life so that they could be bigots about who gets to get married? Why die? No, really, just one lightning bolt, Your Holiness. Give it to me. It goes on like this for a while, but this isn't the good part. Because eventually, they bring up Judge Roy Moore, and that's where it gets really interesting.
Don't go along with popular opinion, but we're not in a popular American country. We're in a contest to do what is right before God and before man. And as a result, we want to present you with this medallion.
Yes, yes, yeah, 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 with this Laurel and Hardy handshake. Sure, why not? Well, come on up, Judge Roy, and explain to us. And by the way, if you watch the video, you will find that for an organization called the Coalition, the Council of African American Pastors, there just ain't a whole lot of African-American pastors there at the awardin ceremony. In fact, all the people you can see appear to be white folks. But it gets better. This is about the time I should probably advise you to knock the breadcrumbs off the hockey puck from where it was just sitting around over the weekend and get the duct tape out and, you know, kind of be ready. I just have the sneaking suspicion that you might want it. Ron and Raleigh noting, well, they just turned that award into so much butt wipe. Well, they made it, understand, this is the first ever Letter from a Birmingham Jail Award as given by the Coalition of African American Pastors. The very first one. The very first. So that means, before this ever happening, there had to be a little committee meeting. Well, first off, you need some right-wing money to set up the Coalition of African American Pastors. Okay, let's just work through this real quick. You need some right-wing money to set up the Coalition of African American Pastors, and then you need a lead African American pastor. And then you need a committee meeting to determine who's going to be the first winner of the Coalition of African American Pastors, a Letter from Birmingham Jail Award. Now, come on, don't kid yourself.
This thing was created, crafted, carried out, conceived solely as a publicity venue for Judge Roy Moore. Because, see, that's the thing. John Lewis is still alive. Very much so. John Lewis was a young man marching with Dr. King. Got beat half to death at Selma. And did not back down. One would think, if one were to give out a first ever letter from a Birmingham Jail Courage Award, one might give it to one of the people who walked and talked with Dr. King and who has carried Dr. King's message with him every day of his life from those days, yea, verily, unto this. At which point you say, well, let's go give it to John Lewis. That's what you do if it's not a faked-up, frauded-up, rubed-up, ginned-up, dummied-up award. Ron and Raleigh noting, well, hell, Bob, they've already turned MLK into a goddamn Republican. Remember, this is just adding insult to injury. In addition to all the things you mentioned, I also have not seen Roy Moore peering through the bars of the Hooskow. Not that neither. Yeah. And while this did, in fact, this was all about how the homos is going to ruin everybody else's merge, Steve in New York City reminds me, and this goes back to 2004, March 24th of 2004, the widow of Martin Luther King Jr. called gay marriage a civil rights issue, denouncing a proposed constitutional amendment that would ban it. Constitutional amendments should be used to expand freedom, not restrict it, Coretta Scott King said Tuesday. Gay and lesbian people have families, and their families should have legal protection, whether by marriage or civil union. A constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriages is a form of gay bashing, and it would do nothing at all to protect traditional marriages. Last month, being 2004, President Bush said he backed an amendment that would ban same-sex unions, calling marriage the most fundamental institution of civilization. And all this time I thought that was the wheel, or upright walking, or perhaps wine, or wheelbarrows. But there they were, even 11 years ago, on Monday. Okay, wrong voice. On Monday, more than 24 black pastors rallied against gay marriage at a church in Atlanta, attempting to distance the civil rights struggle from the gay rights movement. They signed a declaration outlining their beliefs that marriage should remain a union between a man and a woe man. So you see that this was all just a great big giant honking fraud. But that's what the right wing are best at. So come on in, Judge Roy. Let's check in with the wisdom of that Solon of Goat Hill, Judge Roy Moore, upon receiving his first ever, and I don't know, maybe they have to give it to him every year for life or something. Who knows? Hard to say. But let's not just blithely blow past this, because this actually has meaning. And what it is a reminder of is that there is a significant number of people in the fundamentalist African-American religion community who are every bit as imbued with homophobic bigotry and hatred as any pasty-faced, doughy, white preacher. Mm-hmm. Big time. And, of course, we know this, among other things, from the turnout a few years back with California's Proposition Hate. Yeah. But no, really, let's hear from His Honor.
1996, the people in Louisiana had a law that restricted black people.
Wait, and he's right out of the gate and on it. Kind of tinny this audio is, but it's an echoey kind. They did this at the Alabama Supreme Court. Before we roll with this, a little reminder. I have been talking for a couple of years now about what I call the Plessyization of America. And the word comes from Plessy versus Ferguson. Now, right off the top of my head, I can't remember who was who in the case, who was Plessy and who was Ferguson. It had to do with whether or not a man of color could ride with the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing white folks in a railroad car. It was the harbinger of some of the most nasty of the Jim Crow segregation laws in the South. When the Supreme Court upheld the whites-only railroad cars in New Orleans, it opened the floodgates. You know, it was another one of those narrowly crafted decisions, kind of like Hobby Lobby, that turned out not to be nearly as narrow as anyone thought. But I've talked about Plessy versus Ferguson insofar as Plessy versus Ferguson enshrines a concept called separate but equal. Namely, that as long as people of color were provided equal accommodations, it was no problem if they were separate. Of course, this too was a giant fraud, because white folks were never going to sit still for having people of color enjoy accommodations that were as good as white folks had. Black schools were not going to be as good as white schools. Black railroad cars were not going to be as good as white railroad cars. Black drinking fountains were not going to be as good as white drinking fountains, or else what's the point of being white? And I have argued that we see today, especially in the realm of health care and access to health insurance, a new sort of economic separate but equal stalking this land, where if one happens to be working poor in, say, California, one has access to needed life-saving medical care. But if one is working poor in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Texas, on and on, Kansas, then one is condemned to death, effectively, from treatable illness, preventive care, that kind of thing. And so it is that it was Plessy. Ferguson was the defendant. Ferguson was the person trying to deny rights. Plessy was the man of color, and it was all deliberately set up. Who bought the railroad ticket? And of course, the Supreme Court held that no, Plessy had to ride in the colored car. And we do. We have an economically plessified country. But you know who liked the ruling? And understand, if you go and have a cup of coffee in law school, you're going to be hard-pressed to go to a law school, I hope this is still the case, unless you go to one of those really weirdo right-wing ones like Pat Robertson Law School or Jerry Falwell Law School, or, you know, I don't know, does Bob Jones University have a law school? There you may be told that Plessy was rightly decided, but virtually every constitutional scholar in this country, and by that I mean more constitutional scholars as expressed by a percentage than the climate scientists who agree that climate change is real, in other words, more than 97%, are going to tell you that Plessy was wrongly decided, that it was badly decided. There's a dissent in Plessy that is simply scathing. But remember, His Honor Judge Roy Moore of Talabama, the Chief Justice of the Talabama Supreme Court, he thinks we need to take a second look at Plessy versus Ferguson. And he told the world this on the day that he was receiving the Martin Luther King Jr. They couldn't use his name. Letter from a Birmingham jail award from the Council of African American Pastors. Really?
Priesthood rights protected, and they're trying to take those priesthood rights. The civil rights movement didn't take anything from anybody. So we want our priesthood rights protected, and thank you for doing that. The country should be standing up for. You know, I was looking this morning about what I might say, and I ran across this paper that was lying on my desk.
This paper just happened to be lying on his desk. Okay.
It's the case of Plessy versus Ferguson in 1896. In 1896, the people of Louisiana had a law that restricted black people sitting with white people in train cars. And a portion of their comment about the wrongness of those Louisiana statutes referred back to Dred Scott, where they said that black people were property.
Now, pay attention to what he's doing here. Did he say a portion of the dissent in the case? No, he did not. He said a portion of the case. Because there is a dissent. And it is pretty fierce. John Marshall Harlan wrote that dissent, and in writing invented the linguistic concept that we talk about to this day of a law being colorblind. He said, "Our Constitution is colorblind and neither knows nor tolerates classes among citizens. In respect of civil rights, all citizens are equal before the law. The humblest is the peer of the most powerful. The law regards man as man and takes no account of his surroundings or of his color when his civil rights, as guaranteed by the supreme law of the land, are involved." And there is some still pretty racist ugly, but I just gloss over because he got it right. Concluding, he said, "In my opinion, the judgment this day rendered will, in time, prove to be quite as pernicious as the decision made by this tribunal in the Dred Scott case, 1857. Now, that, of course, is the case that said no person of color could be a citizen of the United States because black. It is understood to be the worst decision ever rendered by the Supreme Court of the United States, period. Bush v. Gore probably comes in second. No, Bush v. Gore, third, but no. Okay, they've rendered a lot. As I've noted in the past, the Supreme Court of the United States has rendered every bit as many awful opinions as it has good ones. But this is important to remember as we go back to that little piece of paper that just happened to be sitting on Judge Roy Moore, Law West of the Pecos. No, that's Roy Bean. Judge Roy Moore's desk. Because it was just sitting there. It was just sitting there. He's just, well, I'll be dipped. And picked it up and he was looking. But it's important because he doesn't bother to mention the dissent. He creates in the minds of whatever knuckle-breathing, mouth-walking, brain-dead, snake-handling, serpent-juggling, strychnine-swilling, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking weirdos are in his presence, that the Supreme Court got it right in Plessy. I mean, go back. The audio is not great, but you can make it out.
In 1896, the people of Louisiana had a law that restricted black people sitting with white people in train cars. And a portion of their comment about the wrongness of those Louisiana statutes.
A portion of their comment about the wrongness of those Louisiana statutes. Well, that portion, Judge Moore, you goddamn liar, is called the dissent. It was not the majority opinion. The majority said, well, sure, separate the races as long as these separate but equal. Right? And by the way, let's remember, the whole reason this case is able to develop is because Mr. Plessy, because we used to use these words, Mr. Plessy was an octoroon. In other words, Mr. Plessy was 7/8 white folks and 1/8 black. That means going back to his great grandparents? That's you've got 8 when you get to great grandparents. 4 grands, 8 greats. One of his great grandparents. I mean, it doesn't have to work. Never mind. But he was 1/8 black, 7/8 white folks, white European, and could pass as white. So this was not only a challenge of whether or not people of color could, you know, race mix on train cars. And, of course, there was race mixing on train cars because white-jacketed, black-pants, gloved, liveried servants would serve those of color would serve those white people their cocktails in the dining car, right? Hold me, John. Yes. But they couldn't mix as equals. So it wasn't just about whether or not accommodations could would be constitutionally required to be afforded to people of color. It was also indirectly upholding a racial caste system that was in place and had been in place perniciously for ages in places like Louisiana, where the one-drop rule said, man, one drop of black blood, and you're black. Doesn't matter how blue-eyed you are or how pale your skin. You're black. Plessy was, in many ways, the last nail in the coffin of Reconstruction. It was the last nail in the victory that was the second American Civil War. Because there were two, you know. There was the one that was fought between 1861 and 1865, and then there's the terrorist insurgency that followed from 1865 until, 1885 or so? And then once the federal occupying troops pull out, legislatures start doing everything they can to take away any rights that had been granted by freed that had been achieved by freed blacks, of which the Louisiana statute in question was a part. So there's this paper laying around that Judge Roy Moore just happens to pick up. And he wants people to think that it's the actual majority decision. But it wasn't. It was the dissent. The majority decision was that racism is good.
Lying on my desk, and it's the case of Plessy versus Ferguson in 1896. In 1896, the people of Louisiana had a law that restricted black people sitting with white people in train cars. And a portion of their comment about the wrongness of those Louisiana statutes referred back to Dred Scott, where they said that black people were property.
See, that's in the dissent. That's not in the majority opinion.
And today, their words in Plessy versus Ferguson seem to ring very true to the issues before this country today about same-sex marriage and taking away the institution of marriage between one man and one woman. You know, that institution is recognized in nearly every state. In Alabama, already 1% of the people voted the definition of marriage is between a man and a woman. In Texas, 76% of the people voted for marriage as recognition between one man and one woman. And this is Plessy versus Ferguson's statement. There is a dangerous tendency in these latter days to enlarge the functions of the courts by means of judicial interference with the will of the people as expressed by the legislature. In my opinion, the judgment this day rendered will, he's talking about the judgment in Plessy versus Ferguson, which said they could not sit on the train cars.
Finally admits it.
In my opinion, the judgment this day rendered will in time prove to be quite as pernicious as the decision made by this tribunal in the Dred Scott case. I believe those words could be applied today to any court that recognizes marriage as other than one man and one woman in this country.
Now, there, you've heard it. This is the heart and soul of his argument. And it's going to take a minute for any rational or normal or decent human being to wrap their minds around it, because Roy Moore is vile. Roy Moore is full of hate. Roy Moore is an egomaniac who thinks himself some sort of legal scholar when obviously he has just proven himself not to be one. But he has just said that the Plessy majority upholding segregation is the same thing as federal courts saying that the 14th Amendment applies to all people. Again, remember the Plessy dissent language from John Marshall Harlan. Our Constitution is colorblind and neither knows nor tolerates classes among citizens. In respect of civil rights, all citizens are equal before the law. Is the peer of equal. The law regards man as man and takes no account of his surroundings or of his color when his civil rights, as guaranteed by the supreme law of the land, are involved. Well, some of those rights are contained in the 14th Amendment. Namely, equal protection of the law and due process of law, both substantive and procedural. Judge Roy Moore, accepting his Letter from Birmingham Jail Award, which is probably as close to a jail as Judge Roy Moore will ever get, Judge Roy Moore says that keeping two people from getting married is the same thing as striking down laws against segregation. Which is exactly ass backwards. The fact of the matter is, Judge Roy Moore is on the Plessy majority side. And I don't mean this because this is my opinion. There's really no other way to read it. Unless you're in some sort of bizarro world, I guess. Because when we're talking about marriage, if two men who love each other can't get married, or two women who love each other can't get married, they are effectively denied the equal protection of the law under the 14th Amendment. And Justice Harlan, in his dissent, said our Constitution is colorblind and neither knows nor tolerates classes among citizens. Classes. In respect of civil rights, all citizens are equal before the law. Those aren't idle throwaway words. Without marriage equality, people who want to get married but want to marry someone of the same gender are not equal before the law. But that's all lost on Judge Roy Moore, who really, it takes some chutzpah to go and argue Plessy when you're receiving an award from the Council on African American Pastors. Whew. More and Monday, huh? Let's check back in with Judge Roy.
This is a very important issue. Soon it will be taken up by the United States Supreme Court. And I ask that the people recognize that this is a very foundational principle of our country. I thank Dr. Owens for this award. I think it's very appropriate at this time to recognize the meaning of the institution of marriage and what it really means to our country.
Oh, boy. This might be a good time for a hockey puck.
Because if we destroy that, we destroy what the United States Supreme Court says was the very foundation of family. And family being the very foundation of our country.
Let us not forget that prior to 1865, right there in Montgomery, Alabama, and right there in Alabama, and in Georgia, and in Florida, and in Tennessee, and Mississippi, and Louisiana, North and South Carolina, in Kentucky, in Arkansas, and in Texas, in Oklahoma. Let us remember that very foundation of our country, of the very foundation of the family, that marriage that we're talking about, let us do please remember that marriage, that foundation, was held not to apply to people of color. That's why, as many of us ignorant white folks learned way back when the miniseries Roots premiered. That's why wedding ceremonies were done on plantations among people of color by jumping over brooms. It may have had some significance in what remnants were left of African culture. I doubt it. I don't know. It sounds more like something from old barbaric European culture, sword leaping or something like that. Leap rogue and jump whore and married thee forevermore or something like that. Yeah. But you see, a married couple in pre-Civil War, in the pre-Civil War South, their marriage had no meaning. It had no legal validity. If old Marse decided to sell husband away from wife, keep the wife and sell the husband, keep the husband, sell the wife, that was old Marse's right. And that is something that needs to be explained, among other things, to Pastor Owens. because apparently he thinks that marriages among people of color have always had the same force and effect as anybody else's marriage. It didn't. Marriage is not a religious thing. Marriage, in order to have any force and effect, must be a function of government. Now, some states still hang on to ideas of common law marriage. Oddly enough, West Virginia is not one of those places. But for all the power and majesty with which he imbues it, it ain't what Roy Moore says it is.
Thank you. May God bless you. Bless the United States. Marriage is not based on love. Marriage is based upon the law.
This is the Q&A.
Between one man. Well, in Massachusetts just recently, we had three women getting married. Did they allow three women to get married in the UK?
No. If the Supreme Court of
Why don't they allow three women to be married in the UK if it's based upon law?
We do allow same-sex marriage.
But do you allow three women to get married?
That's not what I'm asking.
Well,
now remember, Judge Roy Moore is an upstanding Bible-believing, God-fearing Christian. Anybody want to point me to that story out of Massachusetts? Because that's how they say that now, say it in Alabama. Anybody want to point me to that story out of Massachusetts where three women's got married? I suspect Judge Roy Moore has done been reading The Onion some more. That's true. In the chat room, Pi says, Bob, there's no right to marry in the Constitution of the United States of America. Guns, yes. Marriage, no. Really? I don't want to go into a long discourse on the 14th Amendment, the equal protection of the law. Marriage is a function of state laws. It's one of those things that the states have constitutionally kept unto themselves. You know, kind of like insurance and speed traps and things like that. But it is a right under law, and the 14th Amendment makes clear that all laws in this country must pass constitutional muster in order to remain, well, you know, constitutional. So that's why that's what it is. Hopefully that. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the biggest part of Moran Monday right there. We've got more Morans. Oh, God, yes, we've got more Morans. Did you know that an entire football team could be morons? It can. And we may even discuss that. It's 18 minutes past the hour of 7 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. We are trying to raise some portion of $1,000 to finish off the month of April. Some portion of $400 to finish off the week. We are trying to match $50 Australian with $50 American pursuant to Robert's Up Over Down Under 20th of the Month Challenge. And hey, it's 420, right? The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. You can leave blank some of those more pushy, intrusive kinds of questions there, and just get to the next screen where it's all about PayPal, MasterCard, Visa, what have you. It would be nice to be on track to finish April okay. Contributions via the U.S. mail are also welcome. I talked to Boss Man at Wayne over the weekend, and he said he put his spider-proof gloves and almost got them chewed off his hands when he reached into the mailbox. He was met with a great big giant echo. But if you prefer to participate via the U.S. Postal Service, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Remember, checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid. Okie dokie. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. Protect marriage. The best way to protect marriage is to make divorce illegal. Cut to Monty Python skit. Married this one on Saturday, but I decided I don't like her and I want to exchange her for this one. I've paid, so if you can just change the names. Yeah, right. So, lines are open if you want to participate in the conversation. The Herald line, 304-574-8178. We used to call that the Skype line, but it confused people. 304-574-8178. The Gizmo line, we now call Maud. That's 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. Okie doke. And, of course, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn. And that's global, from just about anywhere in the world, which is what global means. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. I trust I don't have to explain why I chose white wedding for the bumper. No, I didn't think so. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Moran Monday, and more of Morans we have, in fact, more and more. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mentioned could a football team, yes, an entire football team, well, okay, call it the front office, the management of the Philadelphia Eagles are hereby nominated, as Faith noted on my Facebook page, for a Moran Monday award today. It looks like the drama is the drama in Philadelphia is not quite over, because yes, that's right. We've got another NFL season coming this fall in which we get to wonder, and all the little Bible-believing, God-fearing, upstanding Christianist fundamentalists will go to the football stadium in Philadelphia and say, let Tebow play in the name of Jesus. Let him, because that's right. Well, maybe he won't make it to the fall. I don't know. But, yeah, little Timmy Jebo, the upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, not particularly talented quarterback, with the throwing motion of I don't know what, is going to get a shot with the Beagles. Mm-hmm. Not much of a shot, I don't think, but he's going to get a shot. Or maybe he's just a tackling dummy for the practice squad. I don't know. But, yeah, little Timmy Jebo has been signed by, go figure, the Philadelphia Eagles. Maybe it'll sell some tickets. I don't know. Jay Glazer at Fox Sports broke the story. Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk says, the Eagles gave Tebow a workout on March 16th, and they reportedly would be inclined to sign him only if Matt Barkley were traded. Barkley hasn't been traded, and the connection never made sense. With 90 roster spots in the offseason and plenty of quarterbacks needed to distribute the ball during practice sessions, Tebow arrives with the opening of the offseason program in Philadelphia, rejoining Mark Sanchez, because he's gone from the Jets, too, and a depth chart that also includes Sam Bradford, Barkley, and G.J. Kinney, with Bradford still rehabbing a torn ACL suffered last August. Tebow becomes, as a practical matter, the fourth quarterback who is able to participate in practice sessions that will begin after a two-week lifting conditioning period. Huh. Man, there's some loyalty for you. I mean, Tim Tebow works for ESPN, and Jay Glazer from Fox got the scoop. Goodbye, Roy Moore. Oh, look, there's a... yeah. There's a fun one, because it's Moran Monday. We go for this one to Oklahoma Stan. Sorry, I'm... hang on a minute. Sounds like it's real hell's a popping outside. Gotten dark in a real hurry. We'll just cross our fingers and hope the antiquated, toxic, coal-fired, early 20th century technology Appalachian power grid holds out. Shall we? Yes. Oklahoma City. Oklahoma. Bit of a commemoration going on there. 20 years. 20 years since that good Christian boy, Timothy McVeigh, using a truckload of diesel fuel and ammonium nitrate, blew up the Murrah Federal Building. 20 years. Imagine, the children he murdered would be... God. 25 by now? 21? Right-wingers. right-wing American domestic terrorist. Shh, don't say that too loudly. It gets them all upset over in the right wing when they realize that there are people out here who understand that the single greatest terrorist threat faced by the United States is not from some Muslim, but in fact from somebody who claims to be a God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian. Why don't you support the troops? God bless America. How dare you say that about Timothy McVeigh? But no, Oklahoma City, this past Friday, Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon did something about that state's problem in terms, well, the problem that they have executing people. You know, they tried that horizontal crucifixion lethal injection thing and just wound up having people they were trying to kill suffer monumentally. So they think they've got an answer. The Oklahoma House drafted a bill, HB 1879, and it says that if lethal injection is held unconstitutional or is unavailable, you know, because, when they went to execute Clayton Lockett, he suffered miserably, 43 minutes on the death chamber horizontal crucifix. They say gurney in this news story, but bullshit. That's a crucifix. That's a cross. Just the fact that it's horizontal doesn't make it any less a crucifixion. Strapped down, punctures, you know, meets the definition. She signed into law HB 1879, which says that if they can't get the drugs to do lethal injection crucifixions, then it'll be okay if Oklahoma wants to asphyxiate people by nitrogen gas. Particularly, it's referred to as nitrogen hypoxia. The news story from the Tulsa World also noting that electrocution and firing squads are also other alternatives should nitrogen gas not be available or be held unconstitutional. You know, there are people in this country who have watched other people suffocate to death. And since we've discussed it in these terms in the past, let's go ahead and apply the constitutional test to this one, shall we? Cruel and unusual. Understanding that unusual is a pretty high hurdle to get over if you're using the framers of the Constitution as your measure, because they were aware of execution methods as practiced by Mary Oldie Engeland that involved having people ripped apart by horses or having their guts cut open and shown to them and little fires built and that kind of thing. Head lopping. But really, putting someone in a room and suffocating them to death, that might actually meet the standard. God knows it's cruel because it does. You don't just go sleepy town. And when they're the only ones in the United States doing it, hey, that's pretty goddamned unusual, isn't it? in signing the bill, this is precious, this is part of the Moran nomination, Governor Mary Fallon said,
Oklahoma executes murderers whose crimes are especially heinous. I support that policy, and I believe capital punishment must be performed effectively and without cruelty. The bill I signed today gives the state of Oklahoma another death penalty option that meets that standard. Praise Jesus.
Okay, so she didn't say the praise Jesus part, but you know that she was thinking it. The ironically named Representative Mike Christian, a Republican, of course, of Oklahoma City, was the House sponsor of the legislation, and Mike Christian said, Nitrogen-induced hypoxia is a painless form of execution that doesn't require any specific pharmaceutical compounds or any medical expertise to administer. You just suffocate. Well, hell. It doesn't even require a death chamber. Why not just make them? No, not good. So, in an effort to be humane, the state of Oklahoma has now said that it is going to execute death row inmates the same way that thousands of coal miners have died. Asphyxiation. As the air is slowly withdrawn from the space one is in. Ryan Kiesel is executive director of the Oklahoma affiliate of the American Civil Liberties Union and said, I think it is dangerous for the legislature or the governor to pretend by creating this new method of execution that they are adopting some proven method when, in fact, what they've codified in state law is a highly experimental method of execution that has been banned in many jurisdictions for the euthanasia of animals. There are submarines on the seafloor where people died of asphyxiation. Oklahoma wants to model that. There have been stories of mining disasters where when the people began to run out of air, they clawed at the rocks until the rocks were painted in their blood. That's what Christian Mary Fallon wants for people in her state who have been convicted of capital crimes. Why go to all that? Think about it. Why go to all that trouble with the nitrogen gas and everything when for probably pennies they could just go down to the local dry cleaners and get some of those some of those dry cleaning bags and just put them around their heads and goodbye now? Or maybe that's what they intend to do. I mean, they are, after all, fiscal conservatives in Oklahoma. You got to figure it costs a little bit of money to pump the air out of a room and then fill it full of nitrogen. By the way, just in case anybody was wondering, the ratio of people of color to white folks who are executed in Oklahoma, it's kind of through the roof. And I don't mean in favor of white folks. No. Let's go over to Harold and talk to, I suspect, John. Hey, John.
Hello.
What's up?
Greetings from the border of Texas and New Mexico and Mexico.
Well, at least you ain't in Oklahoma.
Ain't that fun? But yeah, if memory serves me, I think Utah actually did pass a firing squad bill.
Right.
About a month ago. so it's not a new bandwagon.
No, and but the nice thing about a firing squad is you can get all constitutionally originalist and say, well, framers of the Constitution knew about firing squads. They didn't say no firing squads. They said cruel and unusual. Must be okay. And the nine wise souls will go, yep. Or at least a majority of them will go, yep.
Yeah, well, I always have a problem with that. I always think that the individuals in society reflect society itself. And if we're so easy with killing people, then it explains why individuals are so easy with killing people. It's like, a mirror or something. And it's just sad. You know. But then again, being more or less atheist, I always think that it's cooler just to imprison somebody the rest of their life than just end their suffering in a matter of moments.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting. You're kind of on the same track with the parents of one of the victims of the Boston Marathon bombing. They published an open letter in the last few days, in the last week, asking the federal court and the federal prosecutor not to impose the death penalty on Chokhar Tsarnaev. And they said the reason we ask this is because we're going to have to relive the horror of our child's death and the maiming of another of our children every time this case comes up until you finally kill him, and then we get to relive it all over again. Whereas if you just put him away for the rest of his life, he'll never be heard from again, and that'll be the end of it. Why don't you have some mercy on us and not kill him?
Yeah, and you also got that whole religious thing, too. I mean, I don't know how devout the guy is. He may or may not be all that devout, or devout, I guess is the word. Here I am. English is not my first language. But, yeah, I mean, if he's religious, then you're buying right into that. Whether you agree or believe in the 72 virgins and all that mess, it doesn't matter. If he's a fundamentalist Islamic terrorist, then killing him is just going to speed him on his way to whatever paradise he thinks he's going to get. And I would think, and again, maybe I'm just plain mean and cruel, I would think, hey, let's keep him away from that happy day for as long as possible. You know? And feeding bacon and pork products every morning for breakfast and, you know.
Lots of butter.
Hey, lots of butter and Duke against and pump Gregorian chant into his cell every morning. You know, things like that just to make it...
No. Use the torture methods we used in Guantanamo. We used to play at like 150 decibels. We would play the theme song from Barney. Really. That was used as a torture method.
Oh, not surprising. I mean, Barney is he's a sociopathic dinosaur to begin with. You know. Overweight, obese little bastard. But, I heard some today, I didn't catch all of it, but I heard some today that, in fact, some of the people that were in Iraq were, some Blackwater guys were being charged and, or sentenced.
Convicted.
For war crimes and stuff. But part of what got me to call you today was, do you have on your feeder there about, Parma, Missouri?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do. Lovely place, Parma must be.
I got such a freaking kick out of that when I heard it. When I saw it this morning, I was like, I mean, subtlety definitely is not there.
Yeah, so they have a little. Parma, Missouri is a wee little town of 740 people, and. For 37 years, the mayor he's been involved in city politics for 37 years, Randall Ramsey. He's been two terms as mayor. One presumes he is white, nice and white. And so they had a little election, and the former city clerk, a woman by the name of Tyrus Byrd, who, interestingly, I probably need not even note, is not white. She won the election to be mayor of Parma, Missouri. And before she could even be elected, the city attorney, the water treatment supervisor, and all the police officers quit. According to the news report I've got from KFVS, Martha Miller said, I think it was pretty dirty the way they all quit without giving her a chance, but I don't think they hurt the town by quitting, because who needs six police for 740 people? Well, see, that's what they want you to think, until they bring in their Kenyan Muslim usurper dictatorship.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
I'm used to stories about Parma coming from Ohio, but not this time.
Well, I was very surprised. I mean, that was one of the first thoughts I had. I said the town has, like, I heard it was 713, but I mean, you know, that's just quibbling. But you know, you're looking at they lost eight out of their, I think it was, they said a total of nine officers, and they lost eight of them. And I'm going, let me do the math here. You're talking. Holy crap, that's got to be one of the safest downtowns in the freaking country, because they got some serious law enforcement in that little sandbox town, and I drove by through there. They ain't much there.
Whereabouts is it?
I think it's just south of, and I'm gonna blow this really bad on the pronunciation, but Cape Girardeau.
Oh, Cape Girardeau.
Like
the place where they didn't smother Rush Limbaugh in his sleep as a child.
Yeah, they mentioned that this morning or something like that. But yeah, that whole section down through there is very.
That's Arkansas.
Yeah, well, it's Arkansas. It's edge of Tennessee, Arkansas. You know, good God Almighty,
it's down that little boot heel area. I do notice that they've got a water tank that says Parma on it.
Yeah, it's I call it the Redneck Riviera, but that's just me.
No, that's the Alabama Gulf Coast over to Panama City, Florida. That's the Redneck Riviera.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't go down that far usually. I haven't been down there in a long time. Thank God, because the bugs down there are outrageous. But yeah, I was just marveling at it. It's like, you know, any economic development that town had is hopefully going forward is gone now. Because, I mean, that, like I said, subtlety is not their long suit. Because, holy smoking baloney, you know, I could see maybe where, and the reason they gave was, oh, public safety, there were safety concerns. And nobody in all the articles and all the interviews I heard, nobody could explain what the hell they were talking about safety. What the safety concern was or why they quit. It's like, you know, I pretty much know what it is they probably were doing the same shit they were doing in Ferguson, but as soon as they got an African-American mayor, then all that stuff was...
Oh, see, now, see, that's a different perspective entirely, John, because I had assumed they were just a bunch of racists who couldn't stand working for one of them people as a mayor. But you think maybe it was because they were... That's a different take. That they were running one of the same, running the same kind of dodge and hustle that maybe they were running in Ferguson.
Yeah, I mean that would just, you know, get the hell out of Dodge real quick and hope the charges don't come after you. But a story like that just stands up in face to be noticed. I mean. Just the utter stupidity about it. And it's like, you know, A, you've got a police force that's, I think the national average is one officer for every 200 or 300 people in most communities. And in that one, you've got like one officer for every 100 people. Wow, that's steep. They have to be doing something, because I don't imagine the town's tax base would be enough to cover all that. Just doing the kind of vague math in my head, you just couldn't get enough property taxes out there to, unless everybody was living in McMansions or something.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's not the case in Parma.
Nah, they're not too damn far from the from the river down there, and unless they got a casino down there or something, they're not going to be making that kind of money.
No, I'm guessing yeah. not. It's probably just another little fading American town. And
Yeah, I know. I've actually noticed that.
I mean, there are questions that attend things like this. For instance, I wonder if the cops actually live in town.
Oh, I doubt they do. I doubt they do.
So that they're seen down at the Rippy Mart and people look at them and go, huh, how about that? You're the one that walked. We got a black mayor, and you're the one that quit. Huh. No, because I'm guessing they don't as well.
No, well, I mean, it's like a small town that one of my relatives lives in. It's it's 500 people, and the cops, there's like 3 or 4 cops, like a little tiny department, but the cops get paid like double the wages of the people that live in that area. I mean, they live out of town. They live over in the next county and stuff like that. And it's always been a little bit of a sore spot for them because they pay their money and that money goes out of the community. But it just caught my eye about that whole thing. And then, you know, I'm sitting there looking and listening to all the hootenanny this morning about the whole TPP thing and everything else. Everybody just raising absolute hell over it. And I was like, huh. And then that story popped up. I'm like, huh. The world's being sold off in job lots, and yet America still can't put its racism down for 5 minutes to suit anything.
Oh, well, okay, so things come a little bit more into focus now. Parma is about 40% black.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And yet a town that's 40% black elected with a majority of voters a black mayor.
Them damn liberals.
See? Yeah, exactly.
Can't trust them bastards for shit. You know, and bleeding heart liberals. Yeah, they had, what was I saw today?
Socialists, probably socialists.
I saw some, yeah, they had somebody, yeah, I saw one of the feeds, somebody made the comment, some lady was making a comment about how, well, that lady was elected in that little town. She's just like that President Obama. You know, we ought to all move out of this country because he got elected and she got hit. Like, I'm not much of a Twitter guy, but I was watching. So I think it was Twitter or something like that. And I just watched like this wave of responses come out. Like, thanks, you drew it on yourself that time, girl. You know, when you stick your ignorance out there, somebody's going to slap it.
Amen to that. Hey, John, good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to be indeed.
All right. You take care, drive carefully, and we'll talk soon, all right?
Later, dear.
All right, later now. Bye. Out on the road, somewhere between Mexico, New Mexico, and Texas, that's our buddy John. Lest anyone be mistaken in thinking that there is a that the South has a lock on racist redneckery, let's check in in a little town in Michigan, Livonia, Michigan. This is from WXYZ TV, ABC News Channel team coverage, Action Eyewitness 7.
So here's the first house involved. You got a Confederate flag and a noose hanging from a tree. The owner says, it's not what you think. We're going to let you decide. This home on Purlingbrook Street in Livonia has neighbors talking.
Does it offend you as a neighbor?
Of course.
This mom is also worried about the noose for other reasons.
It's a tree that is easily climbable. Like, any kid could go climb that tree and hang themselves.
Mary Greer lives next door to the homeowner's other house down the street, which he uses for his business. She says a second noose was placed on a tree on that property after she complained.
150 years after Abraham Lincoln's death,
we are still going through this kind of atrocities? A hangman's noose and a Confederate flag.
Another neighbor was so fed up, he circulated this flyer to the neighborhood urging folks to stand up to the owner and boycott his tree cutting service, Robert's Discount Tree Service. The owner is Robert Tomanovich. Hi, Robert. Can we talk to you for a minute? He quickly went inside when we approached him for comment, but one of his longtime employees approached us and wasn't shy.
So you don't think it's offensive?
Not at all. I love it.
In fact, this guy admitted he was the one that hung the second noose in retaliation over the complaints.
You don't see anything offensive by that. You understand how some people can see it's offensive.
I can see how some people can see it's offensive, but screw them.
So it's not going to come down?
Hell no. We're going to put more up.
You're going to put more up?
Absolutely.
Robert Tomanovich's wife then came out and explained the meaning behind the noose.
Oh, this ought to be good.
Robert has a friend that died in that way, and that's in memory of his friend.
But you understand a house with Confederate...
You got that? Yeah. Robert has a friend who died in that way, and this is his memory of him.
Well, we've come full circle. Dick Gregory, the prophet, Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. Well, their prophet status is confirmed. Because it was Dick Gregory who first, I think it was Dick Gregory who first said, if Jesus Christ had been electrocuted, we'd all be walking around with little electric chairs around our necks. And expanding upon that, Bill Hicks said walking around with a cross hanging around your neck is kind of like wearing a rifle with a scope on it and say, oh yeah, just remembering John Kennedy, that's all. My memorial to him. Well, now you've got a Confederate flag. And by the way, the Confederate flag on Mr. Tomanovich's fence wall says, I ain't coming down. Is that also a memorial to his friend who hanged himself? I ain't coming down.
Yard. What people think.
Yeah, his family is lives down south, and they like the Confederate flag. They like the looks of it, but it really don't mean anything.
Ma'am, his family may live down south. You live in Livonia, Michigan, and yeah, it really do mean something. It mean a lot. That's the banner under which the Knight Riders rode. That's the, well, Jesus, I don't have to explain. You know, if they put a noose up because Robert's friend hanged himself, the only thing you can say is thank God that he didn't die from booze, blow, and hookers. Yard would be real busy. Still haven't worked out how they'd get a Confederate flag into it, but, well, it just looks cool.
If you're saying that it's racist, it's not.
But with all due respect.
Right, because Mrs. Tomanovich gets to declare whether or not the Confederate battle flag is a racist emblem. As noted, it has been used in the past by no small number of racists. You know, that's why it still flies on the Capitol grounds in South Carolina.
Respect, ma'am. Sam, an African-American man, and I come by a house with Confederate flags and nooses hanging from the trees.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's a little disrespectful?
It's not meaning to be disrespectful.
So for neighbors that might be offended by seeing that noose, what do you say to them?
Well, maybe they just got too much time on their hands. There's no crime in hanging a noose.
But boy, does it stir a debate. Let us know what you think about all of this on our website,
Yeah, okay. Michigan. Of course, Michigan's been taken over by a gang of Tea Partiers, and they love them some Confederate flag. In fact, if you're a member of the closed group Horn Facebook page, There's an article that was posted over there by Texas Betsy in the last few days. I'm not sure when it was published. I'd read it before. But it's a pretty good analysis of white supremacy and why the Tea Party is not a Tea Party but a Confederate Party. You'll spot it right away if you're a member of the group and you scroll down through. And it makes abundantly clear why that is such a pernicious and hateful, hate-filled symbol. A minute past 8 p.m., we still have Robert in Australia's $50 Australian, $50 U.S., 20th of the month, up over down under challenge on the table. And no takers. No takers. Slow night, I guess, this Moran Monday. We are trying to keep up with fundraising for the month of April. And there are about $500-$600 worth of bills on the table right now to be paid. And... Well, it takes everyone's participation in the community to keep this all on the air. Just saying. So a little break and then more Morans on this Moran Monday, the 20th of April, 2015. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
This isn't Alabama. Oh, how will I know? I'm in central Germany, where I love to go. Then how come I am seeing right in front of me? My Lord, there flies a rebel flag in central Germany. My Lord, there flies a rebel flag in central Germany. Mercy. Enjoying the scenery and mellowing my brain. Then stuck atop a free barn there for all to see. The omnipresent rebel flag in central Germany. A massive Confederate flag in central Germany. Oh boy.
love that song. Jason Ringenberg, Rebel Flag in Germany. And, of course, if you think about it within that context, it's illegal to fly the Hakenkreuz in Germany. But you can damn sure fly the Confederate battle flag, and it means the same thing. See, that's the kicker. Because if you were to ask someone, you know, let's say the great-grandson of a member of the Wehrmacht from the Second World War, and let's say that that great-grandson just happened to be flying the Nazi flag of World War II-era Germany, which is illegal. Why are you flying? And he said, well, I am simply honoring my heritage. Nobody in their right mind would listen to that excuse and say, well, good point. On the other hand, that point is argued time after time after time in this country by, you know, ignorant, redneck, dumb, stupid, racist people. Well, I'm just honoring my heritage. Bullshit. They get a rise out of it. Hey, good news coming in from our buddy Roger in Humboldt. Those four squash seeds from that ancient variety of squash that was discovered in an archaeological dig in Wisconsin. He tells me all four seeds have sprouted and are growing. I'm excited as heck. I just think that's neat as can be, and I'll pass the word along to my friends up in the Northwoods. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to Diane, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansasstan, who just met Robert's 20th of the month up over down under challenge. And thank you. Thank you also to our buddy in the chat room, Mo Liberal, who took care of a chunk of it too. So that means that we are two-thirds of the way toward any given evening's fundraising goal here at the Horn, namely $150. We're trying to do $425 to end the week, and if we can, and the way we finish off the month of April is at about, well, actually it's about $900 now. So that's really, really cool. Thank you. Thank you to both of you, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansasstan. And thank you to Mo Liberal. Let's run over to the Gizmo line and talk to Jim. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
What do you know?
That whole thing about the South and the Confederate flag and state rights and all that crap, it's that bullshit because it's worse when we're headed that way again. With the 1%. But basically, with these fools who look at that in a romantic manner, sort of it's good old South.
And understand the romanticization began in, well, during Reconstruction, long about 1875. The romanticization began as cover for the terrorist insurgency against Reconstruction. And again, this is all covered. This is all covered in that essay that Texas Betsy posted over on the Horn closed Facebook page for anybody who wants to go or members and want to go and read it. I might need to cross post it onto my page for other folks. It's absolutely a fascinating examination.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, what they neglect is, I mean, it's as bad, if not worse, unless you were like the top 1%, or you had a nice position, you weren't much better off than a slave, you know, unless you could find a niche to make it in, and then even then, I'm sure.
That's why you had pockets of resistance to being conscripted for the Southern cause all throughout the South. Winston County, Alabama, being one of those places, known as the Free State of Winston, in which they said, listen, we have nothing in common with the planter class. We're dirt poor. We're dirt farmers. We don't own slaves. and we don't want any part. And so they declared their county. They seceded their county from the state of Alabama when the state of Alabama seceded from the Union.
Cool.
And that happened in a number of places.
Yeah, but it's just down here, you know, it's just so. I mean, it's, you don't see a lot, you know, a lot of rebel flags and stuff. I'm sure there's pockets of it around, just throughout the South. And it's embarrassing, you know. I mean, you just talk about showing your ignorance and stuff, and delusional thinking. But apparently, you know, it's just like under reference to Joe Hicks' "Peace Be Upon Him." You know, JFK with a rifle. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Well, it's true. Yeah, just remembering Jack.
Yeah, great Bill Hicks. Well, it's just, I don't know, maybe I'm just a little bit too intelligent to just fall, to go down that road. I mean, people just go that way, and it's weird. It gets passed down from, you know, for generations. I mean, hell, what, 150 years since the Civil War ended, and people are still crying about it. You know, it's just like that Southern rock. I never did like Southern rock. I came out right around, what, 75, 76. You know, be proud you're a rebel because the South's going to do it again. I mean, what's that all about? What's the South going to do again?
Well, that's Charlie. Yeah, it's Charlie Daniels. And Jesus.
Yeah.
He went on to be a right-wing friend of Jesus anyway. Some of it I still dearly love. I mean, we had that conversation with legendary producer Rick Hall a couple of weeks back, in which he talked about being present at the birth of what became Southern rock. And it was, you know, it was a birth born of Duane Allman.
Allman Brothers alike, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, their music doesn't have that. I haven't heard all their tracks. Not, I don't think ever will, but I don't think they have any references to the good old Confederacy, like that was the good old days, which is, you know, it's just so preposterous, you know. Maybe it's good, but I don't know. That's all I gotta say.
Well, folks in the chat room want to know if you're still in Louisiana, Stan.
Yeah, at the moment, my exodus begins Wednesday.
Weather permitting.
Oh no, it's pretty much. It's, I think there's only like a little 25% chance of rain, and I've already got that. There are things in motion, so I will be. You know, what's that song? You know, train pulled out the station, suitcase in my family train to be a plane. But I have to use a Rolling Stones reference. But yeah, the plane pulled out the station, had a suitcase in my hand. Well, I have to.
Well, I presume you're not flying Allegiant, so you don't have to worry about that. But Allegiant is one of those little budget airlines that flies into places like, well, Hagerstown, Maryland, and Huntington, West Virginia. Well, you can get a really cheap flight, say, down to Fort Myers, Florida, from Huntington. But their pilots say they're worried now about mechanical problems on the, because what Allegiant does is it buys second-hand passenger aircraft and then tries to refurbish them.
No, I'm going Southwest. I'm not messing around with that crap, you know.
Yeah, I figured you were probably flying Southwest.
Yeah, not, that's another reason why I wouldn't. Well, first of all, my transportation issues. That's why I wouldn't want to live in a small town anyway. It's like a big Denver, so I need, you know, I'm a speed slicker.
Not gonna move to Bug Tussle.
perspective or something on, it's just, for me, it's just out of the question, Said my brother a while back, maybe you can move to a smaller town. I'm like, I didn't even know what the hell he was talking about. Somebody there in Louisiana stayed at him. I don't know what he was thinking.
By the way, Ron in Raleigh has a note for you, Jim. He says, tell Jim that planes sat on the runway in Denver for 6 hours on Sunday because of rain.
Oh, yeah, I did see that the other day. But that's one of the reasons why I didn't, it was like 24 hours right before that's when I decided, because I got told it was like, that 10-day forecast thing on the news, on the weather channel, and it's just like, I saw 9 out of 10 days, rain. And I just said, I waited to see if maybe there'd be a little pocket, but the hand of fate was on me now, and I just could probably stay another week to see what happens. So that's, everything's cool. Awful. Everything's a go. So.
All right, cool. Well, when you get settled in, let us know where you are and give us a holler so we can make sure we get it right and you're no longer Jim in Louisiana Stan, but Jim in the, Jim in the free state of Denver.
That's it. Sounds great. I will do.
All right, Jim, you take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right, bye now. Jim, sooner rather than later, no longer of Louisiana Stan. I read this New York Times story about Allegiant, and I got a little case of because we know that I'm not the calmest of air travelers anyway. But... No, one of the cheapest ways to get to Florida from here is to go down to Huntington at Tri-State Airport and take a $50 or $75 flight to Fort Myers on Allegiant. And Allegiant's pilots are at odds with Allegiant's management because, as usual, Allegiant's management is trying to maximize their profits on the backs of their working class, and pilots are working class. Lord only knows what they make. I mean, I remember a few years ago when Delta was horrified that it got out that their pilots on their little commuter runs were making about the same money as a Taco Bell manager and had to sign waivers promising that as employees of Delta, they would never, ever, 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 ever apply for food stamps for their families, even though they were eligible. Maurice J. Gallagher Jr. is the chairman and CEO of Allegiant, and Allegiant has the New York Times says they have focused on reining in costs. It subcontracts all but the most routine maintenance, buys older planes, and among other things, the pilots have identified because. Well, two years ago, the pilots tried to get into the Airline Pilots Association, the pilots union, okay, which Allegiant then resisted with all of their might, and they've had to go to court. Imagine that. You have to go to court to form a union. They've gone to court in Nevada. Allegiant's pilots say that the airline has unlawfully scaled back their benefits, that it's tightened work rules and shut them out of voluntary safety programs that are common at other carriers. And the pilots say that they've identified 65 incidents from September to March. This past March, 65 incidents. In which... problems with the aircraft created unsafe situations. Now, it's not quite, so the bathroom thingy didn't latch right. No. Let's see. Primary stabilizer trim failure. Engine developing 20% less than required power. Automation issues, loss of cockpit automation, repeat write-up, loud noise coming from emergency exit, repeat write-up, left bleed air trip. That relates to cabin pressurization and cabin temperature control. Left generator and center fuel tank boost pump failure. Hydraulic leak. Smoke in the cabin. Generator issues. Electrical system. Center fuel pump not transferring to engines. What? This could lead to fuel starvation to the engines, resulting in loss of power or in-flight shutdown, forcing an emergency landing or crash. Navigation instrumentation and high temperature issues. Smoke in the cabin again. Multiple electrical issues, flight director and automation failure, loss of all three communication radios, right landing gear unsafe light, tail compartment high temperature warning, right landing gear unsafe light, secondary trim system failure, lavatories and potable water systems inoperative, compressor stall with observed flames and high EGT. Engine compressor stalling after start. Right engine oil quantity went to zero. Captain's airspeed indicator failed. Eight repeat write-ups on auto spoiler system. Right engine EPR gauge inoperative on takeoff roll. EPR is the primary indication that the engine is making the power required. Stabilizer trim not working. Possible loss of pitch. All of this is from September to March. Loss of fire warning system. Right air conditioning high temperature light. Right hydraulic system quantity loss. Engines won't spool. Spoiler deploy message. Number two engine generator inoperative. And of course, this is, let's understand, this is the American corporate model in all of its glory. Because we're going to maximize profits for the one percenters at the cost of safety to the employees and ultimately to the passengers on the flight. Meanwhile, Allegiant said that the accusations, the allegations, are absurd. Here's how corporate communications works. Mechanics inspect the planes every night. That's what Allegiant said about that list. Mechanics inspect the planes every night. We have analysis and surveillance programs and a reliability program to monitor the fleet health. And we share our data with the Federal Aviation Administration.
Neither Allegiant nor the FAA have identified abnormal trends.
That's Jessica Wheeler, spokeswoman for Allegiant. So in other words, they call them absurd, and then somehow or another manage not to deny them. Yeah. A buddy of mine just is in the process of moving to South Florida and had actually invited me to come down and pointed to those cheap Allegiant flights as a great way to do it. And I had thought that was a great idea. I'm not so sure. And by the way, note coming in from Robert in Australia regarding his 20th of the month up over down under challenge. He says, yay, thank you. Robert in Australia says, thank you. Thank you for starting it, Robert. Thank you very kindly. Marty noting, hey, what's life without some risk? Well, there's risk and then there's dumb, right? Let's go over to the Skype line, also known as Harold. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm well, Jim. How are you?
Okay. Well, you know whose birthday today is, don't you?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sent you that by email. Like I say, we're trying to celebrate in some way.
Well, no, I don't think they were. I don't think Temple Beth Hillbilly was celebrating it. I don't know why they did their Holocaust memorial over this weekend.
Well, that was Sunday.
Yeah.
Not January.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Holocaust Remembrance Day is January 7th.
But it's ironic that they would put that on this day in history. But I'll tell you one thing. There are a hell of a lot of people in this country who are probably in their own way remembering it, and their numbers are growing.
You mean the birthday? Yeah, I agree.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, good Lord, you search the web, you see some of these websites and stuff like that. This is one of their big...
Well, remember, what was it? Last week, the story of the murder in North Carolina, the former Eagle Scout who had the big old Tyson-style tattoo with 88 on his cheek. Nobody just gets 88 tattooed on them. That's.
Well, what's that referring to? The cannon they used, or what?
No. That's like a little inside high sign among the Aryan Nation Nazi skinhead types. H is the eighth letter in the alphabet.
That's ironic because the best guns they ever had were the 88 millimeter.
That was the Krupp, wasn't it?
Right. It certainly was.
No, HH is, you know, Heil, and thus 88. I didn't come, you know, it's not my thing. It's their stupidity, so, you know, sort
well,
it out.
Well, you know, what can be your stupidity can be their belief. I mean, you know, that's all I can say. I mean, there are just a lot of people out there who have a lot of strange ideas and strange numbers.
Well, I mean, remember the Oklahoma City bombing was chosen relative to Ruby Ridge?
Well, it goes back to something in the Revolutionary War, actually. The 19th of April of some date. That's what I believe they tried to connect it to. I'm not sure, but I believe it was. It went back to Ruby Ridge, but it went further than that. It may have been coincidental. I don't know. I used to go to that building for meetings with the Coast Guard before it was destroyed.
Yeah, Paul Revere's ride was the 18th of April.
Well, nonetheless, it was chosen the 19th for whatever reason, so I guess these people who pack these large vans filled with explosives just don't pay too much to the calendar. They're just too busy, aren't they?
And then, of course, didn't the bombing in Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold in Colorado, wasn't that around the same time?
April is not a good month, and I'll just say that. I'm not going to be constricted to the calendar here, but April or the middle thereof is just not a very good time of year for a lot of things. That's for damn sure.
Oh, without a doubt. I kind of cringe when this part of the month rolls around because you never know what asshole is going to try to commemorate it.
Well, there it is, and there you have it. Another subject here, and that's health care. You've gone on about health care in this country. Do you realize you can't even reach the hospital in Charlottesville after 5 o'clock for PAD?
What's PAD?
Patient Information Division. You know, just to call somebody and see how they are.
Oh, so there's just nobody on this. It's all, what is it, all voice, I mean.
Uh-huh. After 1700. Curious.
So there's no way, if you don't have the number, you're not going to find out where somebody is in what room.
Well, exactly. It's all a dialing tree, and it's just all this crap with, playing numbers, and then you press zero, there's somebody there. That's one of the better hospitals in this part of the country.
Now, are we talking about the University of Virginia Hospital?
Exactly, in Charlottesville.
Yeah, because a lot of people do go to Charlottesville for treatment from southern West Virginia.
Well, what option do they have?
Well, it's closer for them than, say, Charleston is.
No, I don't think so.
Oh yeah, if you're over in Greenbrier or Pocahontas, it's a coin toss.
You mean it's closer to Charlottesville than Charleston?
Yeah.
How odd.
Yeah, I mean, say you're like Germany Valley. That's just up over the Eastern Continental Divide and downhill to Harrisonburg, and then boom, Charlottesville.
From Beckley?
No. I said from Germany Valley.
No, from Beckley. Is it the same distance from Beckley to Charleston?
No. It's about Beckley to Charlottesville is about 2 hours. Beckley to Charleston's about 45 minutes.
And that's what I thought. And to Morgantown?
3 hours.
I'll tell you something. The medical care establishment in this particular state is just absolutely dreadful.
And yet, we're told every day that Charleston has a world class cancer center and a world class heart hospital. You'd think in as cancerous a place as West Virginia, that would be true.
Bob, I don't think so. That place in Charleston, it's like being in a dungeon.
Well, which one are you talking about, General or Memorial?
General.
Yeah, over on the Charleston
side. And then they
side.
Have a nice one called something else, Francis something.
St. Francis is there, and Memorial is on the Kanawha City side. That's where all the heart work takes place.
Uh-huh. And even if you try to call the veterinary clinic over in Blacksburg,
yeah,
you get some of the dumbest ass people in the world on that thing.
I take it you're speaking from recent experience?
Yes, exactly.
Well,
for example, if you were to have your cat give an MRI, do you know what they would charge you?
Oh, God, what, $1,000?
$2,200.
Shoot. Well, I get and I presume they have to sedate the cat.
Oh yeah.
Because I mean, you can tell
well,
a human to be real
would.
Still,
if
but
they
yeah.
would for any type of other procedure, whether it's a catheterization or you know any type of surgical procedure or any procedure that requires the animal be still. What I'm trying to say is, this whole part of the world is just like sinking into an abyss.
Oh, It's collapsing with the mono economy that undergirds it, Jim. There's no getting around it. And the sad thing is, it's not, you know, I'm glad you mentioned this because there's a couple of things that go with it. The coal industry is going away. I don't know if you've seen any of the news about Alpha Natural Resources. They're about to get their asses kicked off the New York Stock Exchange because they've become a penny stock.
Yeah, I heard that.
And on top of that, they are no longer able to self-insure their reclamation bonds.
Heard that, too.
Because their reserves are gone. Their cash reserves are gone. And that's coughing up blood on the back stoop kind of stuff for a corporation.
Well, it's out there right on the exchange and in the financial markets.
And I don't know if you heard it, but we had our day of jubilee on Sunday, as Joe Manchin declared that he would not come back here and run for governor. That in fact he was gonna stay in the Senate and work to make America better.
I heard that.
No, I thought I could hear your joyful cries from here.
Oh, well, I'm afraid that your hearing is somewhat impaired, my friend, because you didn't quite hear it from this caller. I have never seen such a Charlie Foxtrot or snafu or anything like that as much as it is here.
Foobar.
Pardon me?
Foobar.
Right.
And it's not going to get better. I mean, I'm convinced that one of the reasons that GERT, you know, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, signed on to the Medicaid expansion is because if he hadn't, the entire health care system in this state probably would have collapsed.
Exactly. It certainly would. And you can imagine how the doctors around here feel about it.
Well, and that's why I get so upset when I go down here to the Not a Doctor and I see anti-Obamacare cartoons on the wall.
Well, they absolutely hate it, and they don't want it to be there.
But it's paying their salaries. It's the only reason the NADA doctors have a job.
Try to tell them that.
I mean, I can live with the Bible verses and if you want to get better, pray the homilies that hang on the wall. Okay, because I know where I live. But to walk into a rural community clinic that is run on Medicaid money almost exclusively, and to see anti-Obamacare screeds pinned to the wall, you know, that's a cartoon too far.
Well, that's just the way they feel, and you know, there are a lot of people out there who say that this expansion of Medicaid has impaired upon Medicare and also secondary insurance people who have it.
When, of course, it hasn't.
Well, that's what they're telling you.
No, I mean, it hasn't. It doesn't affect Medicare. And, you know, there's people who have for-profit insurance, the only way they wind up on Medicaid is if they wind up out of work or they go from a good paying job that with coverage down to, you know, a Walmart job with none or McDonald's or something like that.
Let me ask you something. Can you tell me what the funding source or pot of money Medicaid comes from? And are the people who are on the Medicaid thing, are they paying into the system or is it totally on the government? I'm just asking.
Medicaid is and always has been a federally funded medical insurance program for the poor. You don't pay into Medicaid.
Okay. Do you think that the people who are on Medicaid, as opposed to the ones who are on Medicare plus private insurance, or the people who have private insurance, depending on the benefits covered by the private insurance carrier, what type of care do you think they get? The ones on Medicaid, for example, first.
I think they probably get less quality care because the Medicaid, and this is one of the problems that needs to be addressed, the Medicaid payment schedule is not identical to the Medicare payment schedule. Medicaid pays less.
And Medicare pays a little more.
Yeah.
And if
I accidentally disconnected Jim. Jim, that's my fault. I apologize. I pushed the wrong damn button. If you want to jump back in, that's fine. Yeah, Medicaid pays less, and people probably tend to get less quality care. There's more stringent restrictions on medications, more stringent restrictions on payment. There are monumental hoops that have to be jumped through for the most routine of testing and metrics and whatnot. It needs to be improved upon. More people need to be on it. Right now, the Medicaid expansion in the states that have it, which, of course, excludes Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi, you know, the Confederacy, because we can't have people getting access to health care because that might get them all uppity, no matter what color their skin tone might be. But the Medicaid expansion is 137% of the poverty line. 137% of the poverty line is much better, and means testing is gone too. It's much better than the "Do you have a cardboard box to live in?" Answer, yes. Then you know, no, you can't have Medicaid. Is that you, Jim?
I lost you.
Yeah, that was my fault. My bad. I cannot always be trusted to push the right buttons. There's, as I was saying a moment ago before you dial back in, there's a lot more hoop jumping that goes through for even routine testing with Medicaid. And something like an MRI requires an act of Congress, just about.
Now, Medicare pays for that.
Yeah, there's not nearly as much pre-clearance and pre-authorization as there is with Medicaid. I don't know. I guess the state is afraid that the poors will just run in and start getting MRIs for the fun of it.
That's what they tell you. That's what an actual person said to me today when I was just verifying the types of coverage I have and stuff like that. That's what this woman said to me.
What? That people just...
What you just said.
Well,
we'd have everybody coming in here for one.
Well, because, you know, if the Tollivers up the holler, well, if they get MRIs, if the Hatfields get MRIs, the McCoys are bound to want them.
Well, those things have to be authorized by a physician. And, you know, you don't get MRIs and other types of computer-assisted tomography without the authorization of a doctor. Those have to be ordered.
No, and you'd think a doctor ordering it would be enough, wouldn't you?
Oh, we'd think so, absolutely. But enough about that, because we both know what type of terrible health care system we have, the most expensive in the world, and the least concerned and the least effective. That's for damn sure. One other thing, speaking of the declining coal industry, how is our old buddy Don Blankenship doing?
He was scheduled to go to trial today. But,
that's what I thought.
His counsel moved for a continuance and got it pushed out to July. And I thought, and there I was thinking that old Don was in such a hurry to prove it, to prove the specious and mean spirited and purely hateful nature of the charges. Turns out not so much.
I know they had requested a change of venue to somewhere else. I'm not sure if they were...
I don't know that that's been ruled on. We're at least able to get a little bit of information out of the court now. Some of the gag order's been lifted. But, no, I don't think we're going to change venue. Because changes of venue are fairly rare. And there's a pretty high bar that has to be met in order to get one.
Well, the main thing is he contends that he cannot get a fair trial here.
Yeah, but you have to prove more than that. I mean, let me put that more artfully. There's a lot more that goes into proving that than just saying it.
Well, I just wondered exactly what his situation was. One too clear on it.
Okay. Well, I don't know what his portfolio's like, but as I've watched Alpha Natural Resources stock head inexorably toward the toilet, I've kind of because remember Don was made a paper millionaire by virtue of stock options in Massey, which were converted, if I understand correctly, into Alpha Natural Resources stock when Alpha paid $7 billion for Massey. On the understanding that Blankenship would step down and his liability, you know, just the liability of his carcass being with the company would not transfer. And so, you know, he got his, so unless he has diversified his portfolio, and he probably has, you know, at one point in time, Massey was trading around $70 a share. Now it closed at, I think, $1 a share last Friday. I don't know where it is right now.
Over a period of what, 5 years?
Or maybe a little bit more. The $7.18 billion. Well, when did the Upper Big Branch disaster happen?
2010 or 2012.
So yeah,
Alpha
has fallen through the floor. To go from that stock price down to penny stock.
Well, it looks like that whole industry has really begun to collapse.
Oh yeah, because Arch Coal's in trouble. I don't know if Peabody's in trouble. Because they've got operations outside Appalachia and in fact all over the world. And this was interesting because I actually did some reading up on it, Jim. You don't just get thrown off the New York Stock Exchange. When you drop below $1 a share, you get a notice. And you've got 6 months to rehabilitate your stock value.
And you're gone.
And at the end of those 6 months, if you're still below $1 a share, you're a goner.
Well, you're not worth caring.
And right now, I forget who it was, but one of the financial houses said they would not bet on Alpha not defaulting on its bonds.
Oh, that's going to be a bit of a sticky wicket, isn't it?
So anybody who's got Alpha bonds in their portfolio,
kind of like having Confederate bonds after 1865.
Well, there you go, exactly.
I just wonder what type of efforts are being made to fill in the losses left by these coal barons.
Well, efforts by who, Jim?
Anybody. I don't know of anybody. I know there. I have a friend.
Well, what'll happen is when Alpha goes bust, Alpha will leave. And all of those reclamation costs that they no longer have the bond money to pay, that they no longer have the cash on hand to pay for, we get it. We get to pay for it. But then again, I've known all along we'd wind up paying for it.
You mean to say?
We the people.
Of this state.
And this country, the Abandoned Mine Lands Program is a federal program, not a state program.
Well, you can just imagine what kind of state they're in right now as far as funding is concerned. They're going to cut those programs like
crazy. So when Alpha goes belly up, Alpha will leave. And then, one of the great faults of governments, state governments in central Appalachia, be it Virginia. I mean, Virginia's got a diversified economy, but even though Virginia's got a vibrant, diversified economy, when you get down into the Virginia coal fields, it's West Virginia. And Virginia can't do anything about it. And the political class in West Virginia has absolutely failed the people of this state insofar as it has not shown a nickel's worth of interest in trying to diversify the economy, and hence my mention for Moore and Monday of that idiotic reprinted editorial from the Charleston Daily Mail in today's Beckley paper. I don't know if you saw it or not, but you know,
I tuned in late.
It was published in the Beckley paper today. It was a reprint from the Charleston Daily Mail, moaning about the power outage in Washington D.C. a week or so ago, and saying, "Well, if only the EPA hadn't killed the coal, they might not have had that power outage in D.C.
You know, one would think that the power grid connecting the nation's capital would be a little more secure. But then we had a long talk years ago about the infrastructure of this country and its rating, and the power grid was a D minus.
Everything is. I mean, that's why I keep referring to this as a crumbling empire. You know, I'm not trying to be cute.
Oh, I know you're not. It's deadly serious.
I mean, you know, there are certain benchmarks for small town America, and you know what? When in your small town, you cannot get an ice cream cone or a mug of beer, your small town's dead too.
Well, yeah, because there's nobody there to buy it.
No, there's still people here, but the town itself is dead.
They can't either. Number one, either they cannot either afford to buy it, or number two, they're trying to get their ass out of here as quickly as possible. And number two, the companies have just been absorbed by Wally World or some of these bigger things. And
well, there's another alternative as well. Think about it. Things like a Dairy Queen or a beer joint, those both cater to a younger market. Two different markets, but younger. You know, your septuagenarians generally aren't hanging out in the local honky tonk.
No, but your younger people who would be
are gone.
They're leaving.
Yeah, they're either leaving or gone.
Exactly. I mean, you know, God, can you blame them?
Well, no, I don't. It's just sad to watch, and it's all because this little town and others like it built themselves on the shifting sands of a boom and bust industry that is coal.
Well,
and we've got a tourism industry over here, but all the jobs in it are minimum wage at best.
And seasonal. Exactly.
And so you're out of work from November to March.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's really ironic that you have one of the most expensive 5-star hotels in the world located at the Greenbrier. And they're living in a totally different world because they attract a totally different clientele.
Well, and beyond that, right here in Fayette County, there's this gigantic Summit Bechtel Boy Scout camp that the voters went to the poll and said, well, hell no, let's don't ever make them pay no taxes.
Uh-huh. Boy, did they screw up on that one.
And of course, the conspiracy theories they continue to swirl about that place. A lot of people swearing that the new congressional bunker is there, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Another congressional bunker is located here in this state.
That's what I mean. Well, you have to take into account the way the thing.
Well, like Greek Island was at the Greenbrier.
Yeah, and you have to take into account the way the place was constructed, Jim. It, let's see, when, for instance, let's say a contractor with a cement mixer load of cement was delivering to the construction site there. Well, he would be able to drive only so far, and then he'd go to a guard shack, and then the driver of the cement mixer would have to get out of his vehicle, and a National Guard member would get in and drive it the rest of the way and pour the cement.
Now, where is this located?
Fayette County. It's right on the Fayette-Raleigh line. The Summit Bechtel Boy Scout Camp.
Oh, my God. They're built, so basically, from what I...
If you showed up with a truckload of gravel, you got out at the guard shack, guardsmen got in it, drove up.
So what you were inferring is that this is going to be another... Greek Island type situation.
Well, look who paid the lion's share of the money for building it. Bechtel? Now, that's a humongous defense contractor now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And don't you think they've been retargeted already?
Oh, well.
I mean, don't you think so? If you were an adversary and you were retargeting your missiles, how many keystrokes does it take to do that?
I'm guessing not a lot.
Less than 11.
That's terrifying. Hey, Jim, we're almost out of time. I got to roll. You have yourself a good evening. I hope you have better luck getting through the healthcare facilities.
Yeah, me too. I heard you talk about them, but I really never realized how terrible they are.
Indeed. Have a good night, Jim. Take care. And let's see, let's try to work in one last call. Oh, no, I guess not. So that's where we close the evening. I hope you've enjoyed More In Monday as much as I have. There will be lots more Morans. Well, carry over. We'll call them Titanic Intellects tomorrow. By the way, thank you kindly to Chad and to Randy for jumping in with the fundraising help over the weekend. I neglected to mention them earlier. That's why we're as near as we are to being done with the week and done with the month. We've got about $500 to go on the week and about $900 to go on the month. All help is welcome. We got two-thirds of the way. Thank you to Diane and Mo Liberal and Robert in Australia. We got two-thirds of the way toward an evening's fundraising goal this evening. That is very important, and it is much appreciated. Anybody else wanting to jump in and help, you're welcome to. You know where the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. And I trust you have the mailing address. If you don't have the mailing address, email me and I'll tell you. Or reach me on Facebook or any other, Twitter, whatever. Let's go on and get out of here. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT.org. By the way, the Credo petition is still out there. If you've not signed it yet, please do so. act.credoaction.com. You can find it. Support the AIC Act, end mountaintop removal. It's getting a lot of traction. We're nearing 60,000 signatures. And the more you share, the more help we get. And it helps give voice to people who once they, you know, nobody likes mountaintop removal once they learn about it. So this is about helping people learn. So if you've signed it, that's great. And having signed it, please share it around. Thank you very kindly. And if you want to learn what underpins the AIC Act, go to AIC Act, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.